In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward, with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso, in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Castle. That theme can only mean one thing. The Chicago way with John Cass is taking over Extension 720.
We're muscling it out.
Yeah, we're muscling in on the old Kaufman territory.
It's actually, you made a mistake. It's John Cass and Jeff Carlin.
Oh, my bad. Okay. My bad. So for those of you who are tuning in to catch either White Sox baseball, that's coming up in about an hour and a half or so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll do take Andy Mazur's, or actually Kevin Powell, our favorite. We'll have the pregame at 8:30, but John and I are here. John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. I'm excited, and I want to have a great radio show.
Oh, we will. We absolutely will. We're looking forward to a great show. We're going to kick things off with Dr. Charles Lipson, our favorite.
He'll be talking about the intersection between politics and culture.
Yeah, so you heard the promo, which thanks Chris Duffy for making that happen.
Thank you.
Where's Rose Bell for that? And then we're going to have the man who, the godfather, the guru, your pit master extraordinaire.
The man who taught me how to barbecue, the barbecue Yoda of Chicago to many, author of many cookbooks. And just, he knows what he's doing around a grill. Gary Wiviot. And he'll be taking your questions on how to make ribs and anything else you want to know.
Yeah, 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in and give us your thoughts, your comments, your quandaries, your concerns, whatever else you got there.
And only, not even about barbecue, if you want to ask anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're fair game here. And, of course, we got Pete Zimmerman behind the board running sound for us. Love Pete. Thanks, Pete, always. So, John, what do you want to tell Chicago now that we're on the big 720?
You know, I'm not going to talk. I told Ray in the crosstalk, I don't want to talk about the damn alligator.
No?
I'm not going to mention it.
You just did.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, I'm not talking about it.
Oh, so from here on out, no gator speak.
To me, that gator thing, I've already done it, and later on in the show, we're going to talk to Liam Ford and I guess Will Lee,
yeah.
Other leg men of mine that I had when I did have leg men at the Chicago Tribune. And they'll tell you about the real gator story from 1984, back in the last century.
Right. That was something. I'm looking forward to that.
That's a real gator story, not this fake gator.
Fake gator? Gator gate? Is that right? Faux gator?
Right.
Yeah. No, it's exciting. And I've got a good show. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to diving in on what a leg man worth Cass on the street is. What's the real Chicago way?
All the pain I put them through.
Yeah.
All the tortures.
You say torture. I mean,
well, there was one. I mean, it involves Fifi Bucchieri, the mobster.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let Liam tell it, but he wasn't too happy when I assigned him the story.
That's why I love leg men stories, because they always have names like Fifi Gucciari, Bucciari, or
right,
Three Fingers
fun.
Malone. Hey, no, I'm not. I'm just Jeff Carlin. I got nothing. You know, that name is, it ends at N. So I'm excited for it. And we should be also Charles Lipson. I can't wait, because for those of you who catch us regularly, John and I do a podcast. It's a Chicago Way with John Cass, and I produce and co-host as well.
Thank you.
And we like to cover all sorts of stuff. I mean, the Chicago Way, in our view, is usually the underbelly, the seediness of Chicago's politics.
It's like what Lori talks about, Lori Lightfoot. She says it's a natural phenomenon.
Right.
By the way, Lori, if you're listening, thanks for that promo, man. I love that. But yeah, it is. But see, Charlie Lipson takes the 10,000-foot view.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to talk to him, because we've had the Acosta thing happen,
mm-hmm.
The citizenship issue. There's so much going on. And that intersection, culture is politics. Downstream of culture is politics.
Yeah, and all politics is local.
Right.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I love about this, about having Charles in with us, is like you said, he is one of these guys, super professorial. He's a University of Chicago professor, has an encyclopedic knowledge of culture and politics, and not just local politics, regional, but like historical politics, where, as you say, politics repeats itself. People say, oh, new, you know, history is bound to repeat itself. Politics always repeats itself.
You know, this is, we're filling in here on Extension 720, yeah. And the guy who made it big, besides Justin Kaufman, was Milton Rosenberg, the great Milton Rosenberg. And I can just imagine Milton and Charlie having a conversation.
Right?
Because they did.
Yeah. I mean, he was a staple. So in that vein, let's take a quick break here and bring in Charles. He's obviously one of the best, and I'm really excited to have him. This is Extension 720 with the Chicago Way Takeover. We'll be right back.
We are joined now by Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus of the University of Chicago. I'm a big fan. He writes now for the Spectator, for Real Clear Politics, for many other publications, and he's our guest on the Chicago Way Extension 720.
Thank you very much, John. It is so much fun to be here with you and Jeff.
Thanks for coming in, sir. So, we've got to get start off, John.
Yeah, start off. We have two issues I want to ask you about. Number one, we'll talk about it with Liam Ford later in the broadcast. Liam went to school at Harvard with Alex Acosta.
Really?
But
oh, that's cool.
The whole business of Jeffrey Epstein and the questions that weren't asked. You wrote about it in the Spectator this week.
Yeah.
What's your take on
that? I'm
going
to be very careful because of what my lawyer told me to say. No.
Yeah, that kind of ruins radio. Right. Just say it. Just between us.
This is really disturbing. And what's disturbing about it in the first instance is what's obvious, that there were young girls who we can say were sexually assaulted. And we can say that without all these questions about presumption of innocence because the man pled guilty to a previous charge. Now, what the thing that I wrote about, John and Jeff, was to say, look, one of the biggest issues in America is, do we have a two-tiered justice system? Hillary Clinton gets a kind of deal that ordinary guy in the Navy takes a selfie and behind him is some little piece of equipment and he goes to jail because it was a violation of security and she walks free. Right. And then we have this kind of situation in which we have somebody who's quite rich, really well connected, and yes, you expect people like that to have a good lawyer. That's right. But you don't expect them to walk away and spend the night in jail but get less than 2 years and be able to spend all day at work in your own wealthy place.
One of the, I think, most disturbing things, if we're going to look at this from a macro view, is that this business that you talk about, the two-tiered justice system, is that the anger about it is building. And I get a sense, and I've seen this crop up in some of the other journals, where people reference France.
How about Jussie Smollett? You've written about that.
Right.
I mean, that's two-tier, too.
But
right?
People are referencing in some of the journals the Madame Guillotine about to fall, the corruption of Washington, like the corruption of Versailles. Are we getting to that point where people, now I hear it in the journals, are we going to start seeing it discussed on, you know, cable news and in the newspapers?
Well, here's a basic problem that we have in answering a question like that. It's the problem that we have when we are assessing how many people were murdered in Chicago. We can look at it from year to year. But if we want to assess how many people were raped, that's going to change according to whether people feel freer to report rape now than in the past. We had Mayor Daley's guy in Springfield, who when he died, they walked into his closet and found boxes full of cash, right? I can't say that life is more corrupt now than it was when, I mean, look at the Eddie Burke story, look at what people say about Mike Madigan and so forth.
Correct.
I can't say that 20 years ago things were any cleaner. What I can tell you is that we know about these things more now.
And so is the cynicism and the dissatisfaction with the elites building
to the point
where I see it in the journals. I think it's going to start expressing itself in general circulation media, and then you got a problem when people realize how close to the edge we have become.
Well, and look at where we are. I mean, if you take the look that, one, we've got this dissatisfaction or this disenfranchisement of our institutions like the FBI and even the CIA, even go back to 9/11, and now then the universities and the court systems, we're crumbling at our structures here.
Yeah, there's nobody left but me.
Exactly.
Save us, Charlie.
Right, but talk about that. I mean, that this is not, we were talking about history repeating. This is history repeating in the millennial sense.
This is very, you nailed it, Jeff, because I think the problem is that this kind of anger, first of all, this kind of anger is occurring during an age of full employment and no major international wars. That ought to scare us. And then the second thing is that it's happening in an environment in which there is very low trust in virtually any institutions. Think about the Catholic Church. Think about universities. Think, you know, just name them. Mm-hmm. And it's a real problem. I mean, people used to trust the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
Right.
But, you know, who trusts the Evening News now?
Definitely not. And as we move into the census debate, I wanted to ask you, what do you make of the push and pull over, you know, asking the question, are you a citizen? Now, we've had Republicans, Trump pulling back a little bit, but the question remains in the public's mind. Is it a legitimate question to ask or an illegitimate question?
Well, to me, it's perfectly legitimate. And the Supreme Court said it was perfectly legitimate, but in a kind of bizarre ruling, they said it was legitimate for the government to do it, but you didn't give us a good reason for it. Well, if it's legitimate for them to do it, do they even have to give any reason for it? But leave that aside. The reason that here's the nature of the controversy. The Democrats say if you ask for citizenship, there'll be a lot of people who will feel scared about answering the census questions because they don't fully understand that the census is completely anonymous. They don't attach the name Charles Lipson or John Kess or Jeff Carlin to a specific form. But the Republicans make a very reasonable counterpoint, which is that we have a lot of programs that are limited to the number of citizens in a particular area. You can only give this money to a citizen, and therefore you need to know not only the total population, let's say, in Des Moines, but you need to know how many citizens there are in Des Moines. That seems to me to be perfectly reasonable.
I seek to ask that question, as I did earlier this week, denounced as a racist immediately by many. And I have a column in a radio program. I mean, if you don't, you kind of hush up. And I think that's where the problem lies. When people hush up and they have this problem with institutions that we talked about earlier, and these two things drive against each other and the pressure builds, and that's not a good thing.
Well, you see, what's building around it, really, is that in the universities first, and now it's spread to the much wider society, we have a victims group culture. The basic notion in America is that we're all striving to be Americans, e pluribus unum, and that we're basically thought of as individuals. I don't know your faith or your background, Jeff. You know, I know yours, John, because you're not only proud of it, but you write about it. Mm-hmm. But I consider you John Kess.
Think of my ethnicity group because I don't identify that way, even though I'm proud of my heritage.
Exactly. And that's
I'm an American first.
Exactly. And so that's why Jews conservatives always got so upset when people would accuse him of dual loyalty, right. And Irish people in Boston would get upset when the same accusation was made. But in universities, the first thing that happens at orientation is you're sorted into a victims group. And if you don't fit in a victims group because you're white and maybe you have two parents and you're middle class, you don't have to be rich or anything. Your parents could be postal workers. But you're a putative oppressor.
Even if you're dead, your grandfather came over from Ireland with a pickaxe.
Exactly. And worked out of a pickup truck. But the main point is you're part of this putative group that you can't change. And that's, to me, a really terrible thing. And people said for a long time, what's going to happen when they get out in the real world? And now we know they've changed the real world.
Not only in the academic world, but also in journalism. I think sometimes newsrooms can be just like a university in this regard.
Oh, my Lord.
That's where we're getting.
Lord
we're
save you. How is that, John? Say more.
Well, it would take a long time to explain it.
And time, unfortunately, we don't have tonight, so we'll probably have to leave it there with Dr. Charles Lipson, who is always our favorite.
We'll talk about it when he comes on the podcast.
Yeah, he's a regular contributor. We'd catch up with him once a month. And
am I one of the pod people?
You are one of them. We're one of the pod people, too. So for those of you who want to find you, charleslipson.com or at charles_Lipson. Great. Get on his newsletter. You get stuff every day, every week. There's always good stuff there. Charles, thank you so much for joining us on the Extension 720.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Charlie.
Get it. Grilling in the name of love.
Grilling meats.
Yes, sir. This is Extension 720 with the Chicago Whig Takeover with John Cass and myself, Jeff Carlin. We are excited for our next guest. I know we keep saying that. All our guests are very exciting. But the gentleman who just walked in, John, please introduce him.
He is the barbecue Yoda of Chicago, although sometimes he doesn't like me saying that. He taught me to barbecue, but also he taught, I don't know how many scores of people in Chicago, coached them, talked to them. In the middle of the night, we'd call them. Gary Wiviot.
Excited to be here. You can call me whatever you want, John, Yoda, whatever.
I go to Gary's house years ago. He goes, don't worry. I talked for a long time with him. He goes, come on. Why don't you come on over? We'll do it. I come on over, and he said, what time? I said, 9 o'clock. He said, fine. 9 o'clock in the morning, he's already cooked ribs on the Weber Smoky Mountain cooker. They're perfect. We had them with your sauce, and I got hooked. Since then, I've been barbecuing and calling Gary. What's going on with you, Gary, in the barbecue life?
So first of all, I just want to say that was a momentous moment. Rarely have I seen someone eat two full racks of ribs at 9:30 in the morning with such gusto.
Right.
That was a beautiful moment.
And then Dr. Pepper and a Camel filter. Yeah. It's breakfast of champions. I mean,
it was really great. If I remember correctly, you stood up. I was surprised you could stand up, actually, after eating two racks of ribs, hugged me. And that's how it all started.
I love hugging this guy. He is the author of Low and Slow.
One and two.
And then it's
soon to be three.
Oh, really?
About a year out.
Okay.
And if you want to get that, lowandslowbbq.com?
Lowslowbbq.com. You can buy the books on Amazon and bookstores.
And if you have any questions about grilling, because now's the time to call the grilling man.
312-981-7200. Be nice to Pete Zimmerman on the other side of the glass there, and he'll get your question through to us. But I've got a question.
Yes.
Here's a question. So I'm not a big carnivore. It's just not my forte. However, I do enjoy the science of it. And in your studies and your work, is it big part of it, or is it more experiential? I know some of these guys do the gastrique and the sous vide and all that stuff. Are you more of a learn and churn kind of guy?
I'm a little bit of each. I mean, I believe in repetition, you know. I mean, I sometimes say that the way I learn things is, I call it the monkey method. I do it so many darn times that by the time I'm done, a monkey could do it. So,
but isn't that the key to all cooking?
I really think it is. It's just repetition. And also...
And futzing.
I do. Well, don't futz with... Don't live lids. But also, a gastrique is a useful tool. That's just sweet and sour, basically. So, like, greens, if you think about, like, old-school greens, sweet and sour. But sous vide, I think, is not a great technique for barbecue and grilling. I think people get a little bit too technical sometimes.
Well, there are the barbecue people who measure every 30 seconds their temperature fluctuations. And then there's Gary, who's like, I don't say that you're organic about it. You know what you're doing, but you've done it enough. And you just hold your hand over those three vents, and you can tell.
So some people want to quantify every darn right. aspect of it. And I think that, first of all, takes some of the fun out of it. And also, I think my technique, you could call it, benign neglect. You know, you just sort of let it do its thing.
He's just he's so cool about it. But clearly, like a jazz man, you know, like, oh, I didn't really practice on this, but you know they did.
I practice and practice and practice. You know, I mean, how do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Practice.
Just practice, you know.
What are the things that people should keep in mind when they, there's a husband and wife, and one of the spouses decides to buy the other a Weber Smoky Mountain cooker, which Gary taught me on.
Piece of equipment.
I keep it. Actually, I think I got 6-7 grills now. I collect
them. I have
them
a 2-car garage, and only my wife can park in the garage.
So I'm not weird.
No.
All right. So what are some of the things people, besides getting low and slow, 1 and 2, which I really recommend, what are some of the things that people should keep in mind when they just get the cooker?
Well, I think, it's going to sound silly, but don't bite off more than you can chew right off the kick. Start with something simple and inexpensive. Start off with some chicken. And, you know, it's not sexy, but do chicken like 10 times, 12
right.
times.
Right.
And once you get a feel for your smoke preference, your flavor preference, how the fire works, the airflow dynamics, I mean, your backyard, what wood you like, you know, then you start expanding. You know, sometimes I'll talk to people and they'll say, oh, we're going to have like 35 people over. I'm going to do a brisket. And I go, well, yeah, you must be a pretty experienced barbecue person.
Did you ever cook it?
Yeah. And they go, oh, no, it's my first time. And I think, boy, you're an idiot. You know,
right, right. Yeah, you don't serve your guests, okay? Let me tell you the cast rule. You don't serve your guests something you just started cooking. You perfect it and then serve people.
But for me, I've always done that. You know, when I first met my wife, her dad liked duck. So before I cooked dinner for her father, I probably made like 25 ducks.
Right.
You know, that's just what I do. I do it over and over and over, and that's how you get good at something. You right. know, you just don't reading a book gives you a jump. Low and slow will give you a big jump. But there's no substitute for experience, period.
Speaking of experience, this is Extension 720, John Cass, myself, Jeff Carlin, in the Chicago way. And we do have a question here from Tom in Wisconsin. Hey, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen. I have a question. So, you know, back at home with the wooden deck, we've got the gas grill. You push the button. It's super convenient. People that live in apartments and high-rises have them. Today I'm out in the sticks with my Weber and a lump charcoal, and it's way better, obviously. So my question is the convenience of the gas grill ruining barbecue, making it better, or destroying civilization as we know it?
Well, I think destroying civilization as we know it is maybe a smidgen harsh, but not really that over the top.
And yeah. for those who don't get it, you know, they don't understand the gas, what is it? What really changes in the flavor profile there?
Well, I mean, wood and charcoal have hundreds of different flavor components. Gas is just basically you're getting some of the flavor from the meat drippings onto the flavorizer bars, and it's convenient as hell. I mean, but you know, I mean, what do you? I mean, I have some analogies, but most of them probably shouldn't be said on the
we did a
public, you know,
Gary and I,
forums.
Tom, public. Gary and I did a cooking video for how to make. I forgot the name of it. Somebody just asked me on Facebook, and I put it out again.
With the lovely Colleen Rush.
Right. It's how to cook ribs, smoke ribs on a Weber kettle.
Which Super easy.
Right, which is what we did. And there was a gas grill at the Tribune Tower, and it was on the rooftop. And you know what we did with that? That's where we kept our stuff. We just put our stuff there. We didn't even, like, use that.
I mean, gas grills... go ahead, sorry.
Don't let the fire department find out you had gas on the roof. They're not going to like that.
It's gone now, though.
We're out of there.
I can see it from here in the Tribune Tower, but there was this nice veranda where there was a big honking gas grill and this beautiful patio area. But, of course, it had its fault because it was a gas grill. It was good for hot dogs and the occasional burger, but that was probably about it.
I mean, convenience is convenience. You know, your oven is very convenient. You know, I like to cook sometimes. I have a 30-year-old cast iron pan. I like cooking steaks on that once in a while. I also like cooking them on the grill.
I do, too.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Thank you.
I think, you know, Gary, I got a confession to make. Do we have time for that?
You can confess.
All right, I got to confess something, and I think everybody should know. I mean, you know how people bow to Andre Dawson in the right field when he was playing?
Absolutely.
That's how I am with Gary, okay? But I think he's going to take my lightsaber away because I told him on the way in that I just did a column for the weekend on making Greek ribs. Because meat candy and me are done for now. So I made it with a lemon aioli, garlic, lemon zest. It's in the paper. But I used the Minion method. And now he's mad.
I'm not mad. I mean,
I'm disappointed.
Minion method
I've broken my professor's heart. I can't believe it.
Yeah, you didn't break my heart. First of all, health trumps anything.
All right.
So that's number one. You know, if you shouldn't be eating a bunch of, like, fatty meat, then don't eat a bunch of fatty meat. You have to stay healthy.
Ribs are a vegetable, my friend.
Well, so is prime rib, as we've discussed before. But the Minion method is just basically a charcoal snake method that someone gave a catchy name. And, you know, God bless the guy. You know, he's gotten a lot of mileage out of it. You know, I'm not 100% sure who Mr. Minion is.
His name's Jim Minion. He lives in Washington. He's an atheist. I don't even know his politics, and I don't care.
Well, you know, if he's a politics barbecue guy, I'm pretty sure I'd like him.
What do you mean by that? This snake? I don't follow.
It's so slow cook. Go on.
No, you just picture a circle, a concentric circle of charcoal
in the fire ring.
In the fire ring. And then you light up one end, and it slowly curves around, and it makes the fire last longer. Supposedly. I've never had any problem with a smoky mountain and lump charcoal getting 8 or 10 hours, you know, out of it.
Out of one load of wood?
Well, lump charcoal, wood chunks.
Yeah, sure. See, that's why he's Gary Wiviat.
I also don't understand sometimes when people need to use... you know, like computers and blower fans and things, or especially like on something like a big green egg, which, you know, you can get like 16, 18 hours out of that with one load. And they're using all this, you know, high-tech stuff. I think it's simple. People tend to overcomplicate things.
Where do you get your wood charcoal?
So I get my wood charcoal. I use Royal Oak. And in general, I get it at Burger Brothers, which is on Division Street at Cherry, just east of I-94. It's like a little walk-up thing. It looks like an old-style boogie joint.
It does, with the window and the plate glass window.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, cash only. They have good wood there, Gary, too. Also good wood pecan, good chunks.
Sure.
And if I'm looking for different wood, what should I key in on? I mean, what's the difference?
There's also a really good wood place. I forget the name of it. I think it's called Chicago Wood. It's just north of Division and just west of Halstead, sort of around the corner. They have a lot of different wood, but I think you should use the wood in your area. You know, if you live in the Midwest, don't use mesquite. You know, you have to, like, mail order mesquite. It just seems to be a little bit silly.
So it'll dry out. It'll lose some of its essence. Is it by the time it even gets here?
No, there's nothing wrong with dry wood. You know, it's still...
Who wants the essence of mesquite, though? Come on. When you have cherry and apple?
Cherry, apple, hickory. Hickory is kind of like the flavor of the Midwest. But you want to use what's in your region. The fancy French boys would call it terroir.
That I do know. I know I get that all the time. We got a question here from John in Burridge. John, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for this wonderful, wonderful subject. I've been a kettle, Weber kettle guy for many, many years. Cooked a turkey in there one Thanksgiving, never went back to the other. It was just awesome. The thing is, I've seen this ad for the Traeger barbecue system. I don't know if he knows anything about that or
pellets.
Sure, I know about it.
Pellet.
Traeger is a pellet cooker, and they have a wonderful advertising program, and they're using compressed wood pellets. It's actual wood, and they feed the compressed wood through an auger. It's thermostatically controlled. The flavor isn't bad. It can be a little light smoke-wise. There's ways to amp it up, but a buddy of mine sells these things called Mojo Bricks, Fred Gross Mojo Bricks. They're compressed wood. That can amp it up, but... You know, if you just want to, barbecue is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be an adventure. You're supposed to, you know, hang out with your buddies.
But Traeger's an electric or gas one, right?
No, Traeger uses 100% compressed wood pellets.
But what about the heat source?
The compressed wood pellets.
Oh, really? Just for, oh,
yeah, they're lit up by, it's called an igniter, and it's all wood, and it's not a terrible thing. It's not as bad as using, say, gas or electric or whatever. Traeger's not a bad piece of equipment, but it takes a little bit, in my estimation, a little bit of the fun out of it, you know, a little bit of the adventure out of it. And also, when you're using something like a Traeger, the cook is super even. And for me, I like the highs and lows, the textural interplay. That's hard to say. Textural interplay. You know, the crunch, the soft, the fat, the bite, you know, the bark.
Do you use a Weber Smoky Mountain cooker, John, at all?
No, just a straight, you know, kettle.
Kettle's a great piece of equipment.
Great piece of equipment. But with the Weber Smoky Mountain cooker, you can, Gary taught me how to cook prime rib on that. And I've never cooked anything else for Christmas dinner, except for last year when I was in the hospital. And basically, you just put it right on the top grate without a water pan, and it hits the fat hits the coals underneath. What Gary was talking about, that fluctuation and the building of the bark, it's just outstanding.
Yeah, Traeger's not, you know, Traeger's not bad. I mean, I'm not going to be dismissive of the Traeger, but it's not something that I'm going to buy either.
Yeah, you just kind of set the pace for me, because I do love the workmanship of the barbecue, and so that to take the fun out of it. Well, that, you know, you got to go outside.
Well, there's
with
a flavor differential too, my friend. Though, you know, one is a little bit more even. I like the textural interplay. You know, I like the crunch. Exactly. I like the bark.
Yeah, I love my birds and my pork on the barbecue. It just comes out so nice, so nice.
Preaching to the choir, preaching to the choir.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Get his books.
You answered my question.
Get his books, Low and Slow 1 and 2.
LowSlowBBQ.com. Thanks for the call, John. Well, we got some other calls on the line here, but we'll take a break really quick. We're with Gary Wiviot, the grilling Yoda to John Cass. I got some more questions. If you want to call 312-981-7200, but stay with us. We'll be right back. This is 720 WGN Chicago Extension 720, the Chicago Way Takeover with myself, Jeff Carlin, and John Cass. Coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. And with us in the studio is the Yoda of barbecue, Gary Wiviot. And I accidentally gave the wrong website before we got out of my apologies, Gary. But it's Low Slow BBQ. No and in there. Low Slow BBQ. Awesome. awesome to have you here. We have another question. If we can get this in before the top of the hour, we've got Dave in Fox Lake. Dave?
Good evening, gentlemen. First of all, I was raised on charcoal and only one brand, Kingsford. Okay? Now, just a little bit of history real quick. Mr. Kingsford was a shirt tail relation, very shirt tail, of Henry Ford. And Henry Ford was looking for somehow or somewhere to recycle or remanufacture his wood from his Model T sedans and pickup trucks. And Mr. Kingsford
devised a way. I want to interrupt.
He hates Kingsford, Dave.
Kingsford's just fine. But, you know, I have an internet connection, too. Did you actually want to ask a question or just tell us about Kingsford?
No, just, okay, I'm not insulting your intelligence. I'm sure you understood that. But anyway, I go with looking ain't cooking. But when I put a steak on, I flip it one time, and one time only, be it sirloin, ribeye, or T-bone. Is that correct?
Do you like the way it tastes when it comes out the grill?
Yes, I do.
Then it's correct.
Dave, that's awesome. Right.
Good answer.
That's awesome. Although, come on now. You're not really a big Kingsford fan.
No, I'm not. I don't use Kingsford.
You use lump charcoal.
A lot of extra stuff in it. I use lump charcoal, natural lump charcoal.
Right.
You know, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, yes, the Kingsford story is well known.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't mean to.
I'm a barbecue guy. I'm hard to insult.
We could just be sitting around right now, the three of us drinking a beer and cooking right now. So thanks for calling.
I camp a lot, and my two favorite buddies are my Smokey Joe and my Jumbo Joe. That's all I use.
Thanks.
Now you're just bragging, Dave, with the Jumbo Joe.
Jumbo.
All right, well, that tone means one thing. Gary Wiviat, thanks so much for coming in and hanging out with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We really appreciate it.
So I'm working on a third book, actually, and I'm easy to contact if you have any more questions. I've been doing I'm not with a restaurant at the moment. I probably won't be, but I'm doing a little bit of barbecue consulting or restaurant consulting if you want to look me up. Happy to
Where do people find you? Can they go to your... Do you have the website?
Well, you can...
You can comment on that website on Low Slow BBQ?
You can find me... my email address is my name, gary@wiviat.com.
If you want to know about barbecue, how to cook it, you contact this man. He is just a genius teacher and cook.
Well, thanks again for coming here.
Is it impolite for me to say, John Cass, I love you?
I love you, too. And the only thing I'm sad about, really, is that Peter Bell is not with us, our buddy Peter Bell.
Shout out to Peter Bell. Yeah. Well, Gary, thanks again so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. This is Extension 720 on WGN, the Chicago way. We've muscled our ways in. My name is Jeff Carlin. John Cass, you know the dulcet tones on the other side of the mic there.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the Alistair Cook of journalism. When you hear my voice, you think of a wing chair and a story about, I don't know, something that happened in England in the 18th century. Our guests now are the Leg Men, two of the legendary Leg Men. William Lee, also known as Mid-Noir Cowboy, my last leg man, who, when I had leg men at the Tribune, they're working me to death. And William goes by the hashtag, or the
Twitter handle,
at Mid-Noir Cowboy. That's right. And the legendary Slim the Leg Man, Liam Thomas Aquinas Ford, the first leg man. So we have like the bookend leg men here, and they're both wonderful gentlemen. Liam is the editor of the QRT, which is the Tribune's quick response time.
Yeah, so the quick response team. We do the non-crime breaking news. So
what stories would that be, Liam?
Oh, alligators, waitresses.
Servers
not treating their customers well, and fires. Accidents.
What about liquors now? There's this new spate of liquors that are throughout the country, people taking off the ice cream tops and licking, right? You know about this.
Just another internet phenomenon.
I was literally just talking about this maybe 20 minutes ago with someone, and just I dry heaved, and then I just changed the conversation.
So you would.
Just yet another reason to make your own ice cream if you at all can. It's much, especially in the summer, it's much better.
I would not go out now. We got people at the Taste of Chicago, right, and they're out there. Right, is that what it's called? Taste of Chicago.
That is, yes.
The Taste Slime
Chicago.
Fest.
Not Chicago Fest.
Standing out there and getting slimed random. Sweat transfer by a bunch of fat guys eating goop on a stick in the sun. I can't think of anything that would make William Lee more ill than that.
It's a pretty high bar, you said, as always, John.
But we digress. And the reason we brought you guys in here, and Legman, John, explain it real quick. Obviously, it's the guys who are doing the leg work.
The guys and gals. Yeah. There have been women, female leg men and male leg men, and they're great people. The deal was they would come work with me on the column 24/7, as long as I was working, they would work. And we worked hard, and we put out columns. And a lot of times they would report one story, I would report another. And the column was more newsy-oriented then. Now with 5 o'clock deadlines and four times a week, it's a little bit more difficult to break news, but I do try to write off the news. And these guys still give me a call from time to time and help out. You guys are awesome. I just love you both.
Thanks.
And the reason we brought you in today is because I love this. I get giddy about this. This is the reason I started this. I want to do the Chicago Way with John Cass. It's to tell the stories of sitting in a car or knocking on the random door or the names. The names are the best part. What are the best names, Will, from the stories that you've done with John? Like something that stuck out in your memory.
Ooh. The thing that sticks out to me about John is when I first ran into him on the scene. And it was so weird that I would work out the police officer. Right, exactly. The Tommy Wortham
sergeant. He was killed.
And we were working the same witnesses and neighbors. And it was just, we worked out very well together that day. And it was just kind of completely random because I was just the first guy out the scene. And it just was just a strange twist of fate that a couple of years later, the opportunity that we would work together would even come together. But from that day, I knew that it could work.
And I was watching William work, and he was talking respectfully, talking to people. He didn't whip his pad out right away, like, give me your name, like something Liam never did. I never saw Liam whip the pad out, like, officially, like one of those, like some social worker, like, give me your name, sir. What is your name? You never did that. But Liam had a problem with me, I have to admit. One of the first assignments I gave him, he didn't like it. He turned me down.
Yes, well, we were trying to follow up on somebody else's reporting, which we always, you know,
Brown.
When you started, you were sort of given the idea that you should try to do as much original reporting as possible. But in this case, we weren't, because the Sun-Times had already...
It was Michael Kortz and Mark Brown... did a story on Fifi Bucchieri.
Oh, there's one of those names. I love it.
And Fifi, they had a claim that Fifi was gay. That was basically their story. Fifi Bucchieri was gay, and he was dead.
And he was a member, he was a reputed member of the outfit.
West Side Crew. He was from the Grand Avenue guys.
Yep.
And so you know what I did, William? I told Liam, go out, and I want you to go up and down Grand Avenue. I want you to go to Arthur's Pub, you know, the poor, what is it called? King Richard's Pub. I want, you know, where the wise guys sit in the back and still smoke. And I want you to go to different joints on Grand Avenue, like Las Carol, and I want you to ask them about the gay mobster lifestyle. What did Liam say?
I prefer to work the phones. Thank you very much.
Jeff, he said no. He goes, I'm not going there. I'm going to get killed. Oh. And not that there's anything wrong with the lifestyle, but...
That was a different time.
But it was also nothing, you know, but it, Fifi, because his name was Fifi, he wasn't just, he was named after a poodle, probably.
Right.
But well, it was nothing wrong
with the poodle. Who knows, but, I mean, years later, John and I were actually, we were speaking at Northwestern for another friend of mine, Bill Savage.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's a lecturer at Northwestern and a historian of Chicago culture. And we told that story, and one of the students came up to us and was like, that was my great uncle. I didn't know that.
So yeah, that was everybody's connected somewhere.
You know, everybody's connected, and it's like, John didn't grow up like, I mean, John grew up where he grew up, but it's like, I grew up like a little too close to River Forest sometimes to be that comfortable with challenging members of the outfit in the same way.
Well, we didn't, you know, we didn't challenge. We just kind of mocked, which is a different thing.
Oh, yeah, because that's right, better. Yeah. Well, we got more stories of those coming up. We got to take a quick break, but we're in the studio. This is Extension 720 with the Chicago Way, John Cass, myself, Jeff Carlin. We've got the original and the last leg men of John Cass, Will Lee and Liam Ford here, but we will be back in just a minute.
So we're back, John Cass, Jeff Carlin on the Chicago Way, muscling out Extension 720, at least for today. Hope you like the show. The leg men are here, William Lee and Liam Ford, Breaking Bad on things they did when I worked with them. Liam, you break bad on me first. Break some bad on me.
Break some
people bad. People want to hear like how bad I was, how evil and mean I was when I worked with you.
How evil and mean. Yeah. Well, all I know is when...
And really, don't be so nice.
Well, Will was talking about how he met you. So here's how I met you. I was working at the City News Bureau. I was the overnight reporter based out of the old 11th and State Police Headquarters. But the overnight reporter, you know, if there was an early morning thing, we had to do whatever it was. So it was February of January of 1995, and Elsie Higginbottom was holding a fundraiser for Richard M. Daley.
We just had his biggest fan, Mayor Lightfoot, on. She really doesn't like him too much.
But anyway, Elsie was holding this press conference. Definitely not a press conference.
No,
he was holding this breakfast fundraiser.
At Trattoria number 10.
I come out there, and you learn that I have, like, I'm overeducated for a night police reporter. And you're like, you need to leave journalism right now. You need to go, and you need to, like, become an analyst for the CIA.
He went to Harvard, and I just didn't think a Harvard graduate who had studied under Mansfield, right?
Harvey Mansfield,
and somewhat of a conservative could survive in this environment, William Lee.
Well, no, you get every takes all types. I mean, you know, you need...
It takes a village?
Absolutely. You need every type of person. I mean, just because someone goes to Northwestern doesn't mean they're able to balance and find out what's going on in the streets of Chicago.
If they go to Northwestern, they can't. But then Meisner did, right?
So Meisner's one of the best reporters I've ever worked with. So, you know, he's one of the rare exceptions, I suppose.
Jason Meisner for
another life.
You know, I have to ask you before I want to get back to the stories, but this week Alex Acosta, the former labor secretary,
soon to be former,
but he announced his I've written a column early, just yes this morning saying
it was in today's paper.
You got to resign, get out. And the left freaked out. They didn't know, they liked it, but they didn't want to like it, you know, because of me. And the right was saying, you're a tool of the left. But you know the guy.
Yeah, I haven't spoken to him in a number of years. But Alex and I were at Harvard together. He was a year ahead of me, and I was friends with him. And have run into him a few times over the years. And I always considered him a man of integrity. And so I was, you know, as these things have been coming up about the Epstein prosecution. It's been very shocking. So,
well, let's see. Maybe he will turn out to be the only man of integrity in the whole group. We don't know, right?
On that note, we will have to say goodbye. We're getting out of the way for White Sox baseball, White Sox in Oakland. It's been a lot of fun. This has been the Extension 720 with myself, Jeff Carlin, John Cass, the Chicago Way podcast. You got to check it out. You'll hear these voices. We haven't had Liam in yet, but we will certainly. Will Lee's a staple of it. We'll have to thank Charles Lipson for coming on with us, the great Dr. Lipson, and the barbecue Yoda, Gary Wiviot, as well. It's been a lot of fun. John, you got 15 seconds here. Take me out.
Love you guys. The Chicago Way is the only way. Listen to us. We'll see you later. Bye.